Hello, and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, we have the 2018 Three-Year Outlook Report for Anchorage, presented by Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. First, we'll hear from AEDC President and CEO Bill Popp. Later in the program, we'll hear from Premier Blue Cross President and CEO Jeff Rowe and special guest Keegan Randall. This event took place on July 25th at the Denina Center. You can find links to the full report at alaskapublic.org. We begin with Bill Popp.
So it's been a rough couple of years, to say the least. The effects of the first full-blown recession in Alaska since 1987 have been painful, and our economy has contracted in several sectors with thousands of jobs lost as a result. Oil and gas, construction, business and professional services, and government job totals have all retreated to levels not seen since before 2010 because of the collapse of global oil markets and the sharp impact this collapse is having on the Alaska and Anchorage economy. So for a little bit of context, for the first 2 years of the recession, Alaska has lost an annual average of 10,500 jobs. And Anchorage has lost 5,200 jobs over that two-year period, which equals to just over a 3% decline in job totals in both our state and our city. So how are we doing so far in 2018, and where does the economy seem to be headed? On behalf of the AEDC board, I am now going to present an overview of where the current economic indicators stand for the first half of 2018, including preliminary job numbers, housing and bankruptcy trends, how optimistic local consumers are feeling, and finally, the three-year outlook for the Anchorage economy. And I'll start out by saying there are signs of improvement in the numbers. So let's begin. So we're going to go ahead and start out with our 2018 mid-year jobs update. We're going to take a look at the numbers as where they stand so far. But to do that, we've got to start with where we were at the end of 2017. So we lost 2,200 jobs in Anchorage based on the recently revised final numbers. And that's about a 1.5% decline. That was 6% average unemployment in 2017. What we're seeing in terms of job gainers, only one category, healthcare. We're going to be talking about that a lot today. In who was flat, who didn't lose ground or gain ground, accommodations, our local hotel sector for the tourism industry, and local government. Who was the main losers in last year? Well, pretty much everybody else. The one sector that lost the most number of jobs, and this is for the second year in a row, is professional and business services. These are the folks in the architecture, design, legal, accounting fields, project management fields, to name a few. Oil and gas lost 300. Now, I want to remind you, these are the job losses for Anchorage. That's all we're going to be talking about through this presentation for the most part. So you can see it was pretty broad spread in terms of the job losses for last year. So now let's take a look at 2018. Where are we at based on the preliminary numbers for the middle of the year? Well, we're down about 1,600 jobs, and we're down about 1.1% so far for the year for the average for the first 6 months compared to the last year's first 6 months. 6.2% unemployment. Now, you look at those numbers and you think, well, things are not really getting better. Well, in April, there was a crossing of the lines where unemployment for this year was equal to unemployment for April of last year. And as of June, our job losses were down to just at 1,000 in the preliminary numbers for Anchorage, and our unemployment rate was actually at 5.7%, a full 0.5% below where we were in June of last year. Those are some signs of improvement. And these are preliminary numbers, and they're subject to revision, but we believe, if anything, they might be just overstating the case a tiny bit. So we think that this is where we are starting to see a new direction for where the recession is headed. We actually are starting to believe that it will likely end by the end of this year or beginning of first quarter next year at the latest. So there is a beginning of light at the end of the tunnel. So let's dive in a little bit and see how we're doing so far this year. So we got a couple of job growth sectors this year so far. Healthcare, of course, but transportation is another area where we've seen some real positive signs so far in the first half of this year. Tonnage at the airport and passenger employments are up, and we're very excited about that. Those are jobs being created every time a plane flies overhead. So your patience is deeply appreciated because you are putting up with the aircraft noise, but it's necessary maintenance, and these are jobs that are actually helping our economy come out of this recession. We're also seeing some signs of life related to port tonnage as well as overall trucking and transportation. Logistics actually is the largest part of our economy in Anchorage from a GDP point of view. $3.4 billion of our economy is related to logistics. For context, in terms of direct economic activity within the city limits of Anchorage, the oil and gas industry is at second at $2.8 billion. Overall, of course, oil and gas is the number one generator of GDP in our state, but just for the context of Anchorage, just where we understand why this is important. Who's flat? Look at that. That's a much bigger list than what we were dealing with at the end of last year. All of these industry sectors are now even with where they were for the first 6 months of last year in terms of total employment in those sectors. And that's a very, very positive sign. And then who's losing? We still have some categories that are losing jobs, but I will tell you that in the latest monthly numbers, several of these sectors are seeing lessening job losses. And we expect them to go up into the even or maybe even slight growth by the end of the year for a number of these categories. I would point out that retail is our number one job loser this year, but I want to give you a little context on that. That's not necessarily because of our recession. It is because of national decisions at Sam's Club, at Sears, and at Toys R Us, where they made decisions based on their national company business model to close the stores. That's about two-thirds of the job losses in retail. So in the broader sense of the economy, we really are not seeing recession-related job losses in that particular category. So we expect that category to improve as the year progresses and we hit the anniversary dates of those closures. So now let's move on to some other indicators. So the housing market, I share this with you, this is the 10-year average, going back 10-year record for the first half of the year. And you can see that the Anchorage in terms housing market in terms of home sales is right in there with the top 5 years of the last 10 years. So numbers still continue to remain relatively good. It's not as strong as it was last year or 3 years ago, but it definitely is another good year shaping up for the housing market in terms of sales. And then when we look at the overall housing unit starts, this is one of the contributors to why our housing market continues to remain relatively strong in terms of the average price of a single family home, which we'll talk about in a moment. We're just not building a lot of houses. The numbers still remain relatively low, and we need to do what we can to encourage new housing development in our city. The blue bar at the end at 440 is what we're projecting for the year in terms of total houses built this year based on current trends. The building season is limited, and a lot of those permit applications needed to be made, and so this is what we think is where things are going to end for this year. There is still potential for surprise, but we're not seeing a significant amount of new housing construction in Anchorage, and that is a challenge for our market. To put it into comparison, this is what's going on in the Matanuska-Susitna borough. And we are building a lot of houses, they are building a lot of houses out in the Matsu borough. And we are continuing to see strength in that as one of the major elements of their economy right now. And I think this is opportunity lost for the city of Anchorage to see all of this energy going out of our community and going to the north. I don't fault Matsu, it is not their fault. It is our own issue to address in terms of figuring out how to overcome policy challenges, land availability challenges, and other issues related to why we are not building enough houses. Bankruptcies, I do want to point out that our bankruptcy rate so far for the first half of this year is putting us on track for another really low year of bankruptcies. We will probably undercut and show the lowest year in the trend line that you're seeing there. So that's another positive sign. Again, financial resiliency of our business community and our personal finances continue to be demonstrated in these numbers. So now let's talk about consumer optimism. If consumers aren't optimistic, they don't shop. They don't purchase new homes. They don't buy new cars. They don't go out to eat. They don't buy new clothes. They make do with what they've got. This is a really important indicator for our services-based economy. The vast majority of our economy is based on service providing. We only have about 13,000 jobs in Anchorage out of the 151,000 jobs that we average that are goods-producing jobs, jobs that make something or construct something. So service economy is very important, and the confidence of local consumers is critical to the success of our service economy. We provide this report quarterly. We do a telephone survey, and we check out what the current trends are within our local consumer base. So here are the numbers. We have had the best indicator we have had in 3 years for the overall consumer optimism index. At 57, that gets above that important 55 threshold. Between 45 and 55, we view it as we're not sure. But when you get above 55, you start leaning towards optimism. When you go below 45, you start leaning towards pessimism. And this is the first time the index has been this high in 3 years. So that's a positive sign. There's some cautious optimism in our consumer sector. So what makes up this particular set of indicators? It is these three questions. What is your confidence in the local economy as it stands today? What is your personal financial confidence in terms of your own situation right now? And what are your future expectations for the Anchorage economy? So local economy confidence, we're not pessimistic, we're not optimistic, we're still kind of waiting and seeing. On personal financial confidence, this is the best number we've had since 2014 on this indicator. Very solid. People feel like they've got income and that they've got savings and that they can put food on the table, a place to live, and are able to feel confident in their own financial situation. Future expectations, this is the first time that we've started moving that close to being actually somewhat optimistic about the future. That number was critically low just a year and a half ago at 38. So this is a marked improvement. And it is interesting that this takes place right after we get a partial solution to the state's fiscal crisis out of the legislature, combined with increasing prices of a barrel of oil and some positive announcements out of the oil patch in terms of new investments. So these are the kinds of things that are going to influence this indicator. We publish this on a quarterly basis. If you're a business that's in the service sector, or if you're just interested in wanting to know what's going on in the minds of your fellow citizens of Anchorage, you can follow this with us on our website at aedcweb.com or watch for the press and media that we do on this particular indicator. So now let's dive into the three-year outlook. This is our one long-term outlook that we do. Normally in January, we do our one-year outlook for the coming year for jobs and a couple of other indicators. This is our broader long-term outlook, about as far out as we're willing to go, which is 3 years, and we check a number of different major macro indicators for the economy that we'll go through right quick. All right, so let's dive into this. So population numbers, we saw a loss of population this year we are projecting at 1,500. This is a combination of people leaving our city and people coming to our city, the net end being less people. But also offset by two times as many births as there are deaths. That's a positive sign. And when you combine that all, we ended up with about a 1,500 net loss. Now, some of the people that are leaving our city are going to the Mat-Su. A lot of people that are leaving our city are going to the lower 48, where the economy is really cranking, where unemployment points is below 4%, and where there are a lot of jobs to be had and not a lot of job candidates in some cases to fill those jobs. So there's opportunity to be had. We believe that we're going to lose another 500 folks from our population this year to next year, and then it's going to go flat for a couple of years, and then we are going to go ahead and see a return to growth by about 2021. Modest. There needs to, you know, our community and our state, quite honestly, low population that it is, it's 738,000. Its population ebbs and flows based on our economic fortunes to a very significant degree. And so this is a situation where in other states you might see a population remain resident, waiting out the bad times. Up here, there is, because of our high cost of living and other factors, it does tend to push people out of our state to go seek other opportunities when the economy turns down. So as the economy begins to turn, as we're about to talk about, we believe that we'll return to population growth in a few years. Anchorage employment, we're expecting our job forecast that we put out in January to hold true this year. The numbers seem to be trending that way. We're going to lose about 1,000 jobs in our local economy this year, but most of those job losses are going to be felt in the first half of the year, and we believe that several sectors are going to be returning to flat or even slight growth by the end of the year, and that is going to put us in a net loss of about 1,000 jobs this year. And then going flat the following year, and then returning to growth by 2020. Small, modest growth, about 0.5%. And that is based on what we know today. This can all change based on different factors. There could be a significant new surge of investment in the oil patch, which could change this outlook completely. There could be a significant challenge to us based on tariffs that could pinch our global markets that Alaska sells to. That could be a negative effect. There are a lot of things and a lot of moving parts out there that could affect this forecast. But based on what we know today, this is what we believe. And this is the direction that we feel is the direction that the economy will go over the next 3 years in terms of employment.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. we continue with Bill Popp from Anchorage Economic Development Corporation presenting the 2018 three-year outlook report for Anchorage.
All right, personal income. This is an area where it's been kind of a mixed bag with the job losses that we've had. That's been a bit of a challenge for us, and it's put us in a position of being relatively flat from 16 to 17. And we believe, though, that in 18 we will continue to be flat, but 19 we should return to growth. Now, there's some things that are influencing this. One is the increase of the permanent fund this year, which will help to offset some of the losses that we'll see from job losses in terms of income. A $1,600 permanent fund will inject a fair amount of cash into the economy that will help offset that to a degree. Another piece to this is tax reform. This year, we expect to see an additional $90 million remain in our economy instead of going out into the federal government's tax coffers. And based on a couple of different analysis that you can read about in our report in detail, it is projected that it'll add another $200 million to our economy in the next couple of years each year in terms of taxes that might have gone into the federal coffers versus staying here in our economy. Those are all contributing, as well as some slight return to growth, to helping to see our personal income numbers go up over the next few years. That's opportunity for business. That means that there's more cash circulating in our economy and an opportunity for selling to customers. Air passenger volumes at Anchorage International Airport are doing really, really well. And this is in part due to tourism, in part due to some sense of recovery in our economy in some sectors. And this is all contributing to some nice, modest growth in our passenger numbers. For 2018, we're projecting 5.55 million passenger enplanements at Anchorage International, and by 2021, 5.8 million passenger enplanements. Those are good, solid numbers that are helping to keep our passenger network at Anchorage International Airport very robust, keeping us with a lot of options for both direct flights to cities outside of Alaska that we want to go to, and just generally is a big help to keeping this job generator at Anchorage International Airport going in the right direction. Now, when we look at the freight volumes, that's another really positive story. The national economy's recovery is generating a tremendous increase in the amount of tonnage that we're getting through Anchorage International Airport, as you can see by our projection for this year, just shy of 3.2 million metric tons. Anchorage International Airport, fifth busiest cargo airport on the planet. Fifth busiest. Hong Kong is number one. And then there's several other airports in between us and Hong Kong. But Anchorage being one of the top five to 600 wide-body jets a week landing at Anchorage International Airport. And again, this is one of the major drivers for job growth at the airport that has helped us to offset some of the losses we have seen in other categories of employment in Anchorage. So we've got a very positive outlook for Anchorage International Airport cargo growth going forward. I will very clearly state that tariffs and potential trade wars do loom over this projection. And while we don't have anything yet that we can point to say is a problem, we are very cognizant of that. But based on what we know today, we believe that the tonnage numbers will continue to increase at Anchorage International Airport, which is a very good thing for our economy. Port of Alaska volumes have been relatively flat over the last few years, but then again, it is still a critical logistics hub for the state. It is the linchpin of Alaska's economy. Over 80% of the consumer goods entering mainland Alaska come over the docks at the Port of Alaska. The port is embarking on its next phase of development, the new fuels and bulk commodity docks infrastructure. That's an important investment in terms of maintaining this key piece of logistics for our state's economy. But we're still about $700 million shy of what we need to do to that dock infrastructure. And so the municipality of Anchorage, in partnership with its port leadership, is working on strategies, but I'm here to tell you that the state's economy is linchpinned by that dock infrastructure. And it is important that we revitalize that dock infrastructure for the long-term health of our economy and future investment in our state. But right now, our tonnage numbers at the port, based on the small, modest growth that we're projecting in the next few years, should be going up, and that's a good thing for jobs and for the Anchorage and Alaska economy. Our building permit values are down and continue to be down. They're at about 80% of where they were at this point last year based on today's report. We haven't had a lot of government projects going other than federal projects and a few small state municipal projects that are contributing to this. Private sector is trying to get a few things done. We've got some good investments that you can read about in our report that we can highlight, but overall building permits still remain low. And this has been a downward pressure on our construction employment. We are seeing construction employment numbers that are at the lowest in memory. And so this is both a challenge in the now, in terms of the fact that we don't have as many jobs as we would like in construction, but it's also a potential challenge in the recovery, because construction workers have got to work. And if they don't find the work here, they are very portable. They can get up and move. And so that's going to be a concern for us, given the national economy that we are competing against, for retaining a good, strong, robust construction industry to help us when we come out of the recession and start to get back to growth. So that's something that we're going to need to keep an eye on. I believe that the construction trades will step up. I believe that the construction industry is going to be doing everything it can to man the projects when they start to come down the pipeline again. But it is something that we need to be keeping an eye on and help where we can to make sure that we have a good, robust industry ready to take on the construction that will be needed when we start to return to growth. Oil prices. This is the one thing that we used to do it for fun, but now it's almost kind of, you know, like, gosh, you know, hang on to your hat. As you can see, it's been a roller coaster ride for the last several years. And last year we projected $52 a barrel and it came in at 54. We've been about half right in our projections. So, you know, flip the coin in the air and you'll have the same odds of being right as we do. But we do track several different indicators and several different both private sector and government analysts who are projecting prices forward. And this is our projections for this year at $71 a barrel and a small but steady modest decline over the next 3 years. Now, it's interesting, Citibank just came out today with their projection, and next year they're projecting $45 a barrel. So, you know, there are a lot of different analysts to track. We feel that with the volatility that we just saw the last couple of weeks, with oil dropping about $10 a barrel in the space of about a week, week and a half, that there's still a lot of volatility in global energy markets, and there's a lot of work to be done yet and a lot of time that's probably going to have to go by before we start to see stability in these markets. But based on what we know today, this is where we think the general direction is going on oil and gas prices. There is a lot of potential projects on the North Slope. There are great companies that are out there trying to develop those projects and to get new barrels into the pipeline, because that is a significant issue for us in regards to future production. We've still got another year of projected growth on oil throughput in taps, but then the year after that, in 2020, things start to decline again based on what the state of Alaska knows today. So those are some of the things that we have to be aware of. So from a summary point of view, we've got a lot of things that we have to talk about very quickly. The latest employment data does show that there are job losses in several sectors, but that they are starting to level off, and that we're seeing really good growth in tourism, in healthcare, in airport and logistics-related businesses. There is some modest job losses still going on, but those losses seem to be narrowing in the preliminary numbers, and that's a positive sign, and again, supports our contention that we believe that the recession is likely to end by the end of this year or first quarter of next year. At least that's where things seem to stand today. That could all change tomorrow. This is the interesting times that we live in. Our consumer confidence is rebounding, and that's a very, very positive sign. So money isn't being stuffed in the mattress, and hopefully we'll see more robust sales in the fourth quarter this year for the holidays and permanent fund season. And the recession, as we say, is looking like it's nearing its end. So this is the question that I want to pose to the business leaders in this room. Is now the time to be thinking about, is it time to invest? Buy low, sell high. Remember that adage? Well, this may be the low point in the buy low cycle. The opportunity to potentially invest in your future to take advantage of the up cycle when it comes, maybe now. Depends on your individual business. But what I challenge you with is it's probably time to dust off those plans that you've been sitting on for the last 2 years and think about when it may be time to pull the trigger on those plans. There's a lot of money sitting in the banks, a lot of cash, close to $13 billion on deposit in our banks and credit unions right now. If you think that it's near the point in the cycle where it's good time for you to invest, now would be the time to do it if that fits your model. And so we just want to bring that up. And, you know, because it's easy to get caught down in the weeds of the recession, and it's not hard to get beaten down by the constant drumbeat of tight sales, tight markets, and the inability to turn a profit as easily as we used to be able to. And again, job growth should return by 2020. It could happen sooner if we do get a more full solution to the state's fiscal crisis, because it's not done yet. It's about an 80% solution based on who you talk to. And there's still about 20% that still needs to be solved one way or the other, through budget cuts, through new revenue streams, or other creative thinking. Maybe the price of a barrel of oil will save us. Maybe it won't. But these are the things that are affecting our forecast for the coming 3 years. Thank you all for your attention.
This is KSKA Anchorage. You're listening to Addressing Alaskans. We've just heard from Anchorage Economic Development Corporation President and CEO Bill Popp with a 2018 three-year outlook report for Anchorage. We continue with Premier Blue Cross President and CEO Jeff Rowe discussing healthcare in Alaska. Later in the program, we'll hear from five-time Olympian Keegan Randall. This event was recorded at the Dena'ina Center on July 25th. Here's Jeff Rowe.
Thank you, Bill, and good afternoon, everybody. Healthcare is amazing in the United States. It is also uneven, it is crazy, and as you know all too well here in Alaska, it is very expensive. We live in an unprecedented age of technological advancement, and these breakthroughs lead the good news stories in healthcare that we are reading more and more frequently. So having said that, let me set some background on healthcare. I know healthcare benefits for your employees are eating up more and more of your bottom line. The same is true, by the way, at Premera Blue Cross, and we're a health plan. In the United States, we spend twice as much per person on healthcare as the average of all other developed countries. And in Alaska, the costs of many procedures are twice as high as the lower 48 average. It is not a stretch to say that Alaska has the highest healthcare costs in the world. Let's look at a few recent Alaska healthcare cost comparisons. Bill threw a lot of statistics at you. I'm going to add to that. The Alaska Healthcare Commission contracted with the consulting firm Milliman in 2011 to study healthcare costs in Alaska. Premera, 2 years ago, also contracted with Milliman to update that study. And I'm sorry to say that the results provide no comfort for any of us. While the Consumer Price Index is about 6% higher here, payments to doctors and hospitals in Alaska are 76% higher than nationwide averages. And after accounting for the cost of living, they are increasing twice as fast as inflation. Health plans such as Premera pay Alaska doctors and hospitals in our network more than double what we do in Washington. We pay Alaskan specialists such as orthopedists and cardiologists more than 2.5 times the national average. For example, on average, knee replacement surgery is $7,000 here, but less than half that in New York. New York is not a cheap place to live or to even receive health care. Pain medications in Alaska cost twice what they do in Washington, and even a basic office visit here costs up to 35% higher than in Seattle. For us, and for you as well, these circumstances make something crazy into something sensible. In many cases, it is actually cheaper for us to fly a patient and a companion to Seattle, pay their airfare, their hotel, their cab fare, and their meals, than it is to perform a procedure here in Anchorage. Do you know how much that saves? On average, doing all that saves $13,000. Across all procedures. But the high prices that you experience here are baked into the whole of the US healthcare system. First, insurers pay a fee for every service, which means our system rewards volume of care as opposed to the value of care. US doctors also conduct more tests than in other countries, which is in part a defensive response to our country's tendency to file liability lawsuits. We also perform more high-cost surgical procedures, knee replacements, cataract surgeries, coronary bypass grafts. But of these two factors, cost and utilization, prices, high prices in particular, account for far more of our higher spending than unnecessary or expensive procedures. Unfortunately, all this care isn't making us any healthier. In fact, on overall quality, the United States ranks 37th, among developed nations between Costa Rica and Slovenia. In infant mortality, the United States ranks 32nd out of the 35 wealthiest nations in the world, and that's down from 12th in 1960. Here's one other reflection on the quality of care. The typical Medicare patient in treatment has 16 doctors providing their care. 16. Consider further that almost one out of every five patients is readmitted to hospitals for the same condition within 30 days. About half of these readmissions for Medicare patients are believed to be avoidable. Another concern is that health care that people receive is very uneven. There is tremendous variance in the quality as well as the outcome, not to mention the price. Recently, Premera partnered with the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Institute down in Seattle to study cancer outcomes and costs. Using data from private insurers, Premera among them and a few others, this made that report the first of its kind in the nation. The study revealed distinctly uneven results. It found among comparable cases a 23% swing across providers in how often a chemo patient needed to go to the hospital or the emergency room. What's more, there was nearly a 40% difference between costs across providers, and this is key. The better outcomes were associated with lower costs. That's uneven care and needless expense. A national study published just last week revealed another kind of uneven care and cost. 30% of women who had gone through surgery for early stage breast cancer did not get follow-up breast cancer screening, even though it's clearly recommended by the relevant medical societies. At the same time, 32% of the women instead got follow-up screens for other parts of their body, even though that is not recommended. So all this has really significant implications for our economy. And Bill set up what's next very well. As an industry, healthcare is a major part of the economy, you know that, but it's becoming even bigger. In 1960, healthcare was 5% of our gross domestic product. By next year, it's expected to be 20%. We will spend $3.3 trillion nationally on healthcare. In Anchorage, since 2008, healthcare jobs have increased 42%. So on the surface, you might say, well, that's a good thing. After all, more professionals caring for more people. But it is not without implications, and I think it's really important in settings like this that we think about those implications on a more macro basis. Here's the problem with healthcare. It is not an export business. That is, it does not bring in outside money. Patient care is delivered in the local community and largely paid for by local resources. So as a result, payment essentially amounts to passing money among neighbors. The consequence? Healthcare spending imposes a ceiling on local wealth, and the more communities spend on healthcare, obviously the less there is for other needs. It's estimated that about 30% of all healthcare in the United States is waste. That's $900 billion every year. $900 billion is more than the United States government spends on K-12 education. Due to the high cost structure here in Alaska, the percentage here may be considerably higher still. So I don't mean to suggest, given all those numbers and sort of the dire, sobering implications of healthcare, that much of what we do in healthcare is not valuable. But we should make decisions mindful of the effects. From my health plan point of view, a major barrier to moderating healthcare costs in Alaska is what has become known as the 80th percentile rule. This state policy requires that we pay out-of-network providers, those with whom we do not have a contract, at the 80th percentile of what others in their area charge. In effect, the providers collectively determine their own compensation. Further, the 80th percentile has the effect of setting the starting point for what we pay our in-network contracted providers. So the rule keeps all costs high. This isn't the fault of doctors and hospitals. Let me be clear about that. If I were them, I would do the same. But it makes about as much sense as giving health insurers all the control over what doctors are paid. We appreciate it's a difficult balancing act, and because there is also a shortage of some physician specialties in Alaska. So our job as the largest health plan here has been to find a balance between moderating costs and maintaining access to care. We believe this rule, the 80th percentile rule, which is unique to Alaska, is a major barrier to lowering costs. One of our other strategies at Premera to bring down costs is to negotiate with more providers and bring them into our network. We currently have 4,000 physicians in our network. It's important to work closely with the Alaska provider community to contract at fair rates that moderate costs. Bringing more providers into our network should bring them more patients and bring down the overall cost of care. We are very committed to expanding that network and have made great strides in that regard. A tribute to both sides, the providers and to Premera. In fact, you also, as business leaders and key employers, also have a key role to play. The business community can get involved by advocating for changes that will bring down costs. After all, you pay the healthcare bills for your employees, so you should have a prominent seat at the table. Of course, finding solutions requires that we have providers at the table too. And I know there are doctors and hospital administrators in the community who are very concerned about high costs and want to help. The truth of the matter is the most effective ways to combat high healthcare costs all involve collaboration among payers, providers, members, regulators, and legislators. None of us can do it alone. The complexity is just simply too great and the work too challenging. And I know as payers, we have a role to play besides all that. We must do a better job of lessening the administrative burden on our providers as well as on our customers, and just in general, making the experience in healthcare far better than it is today and more like we experience in so many other industries. I'd like to thank all of you for turning out today, for listening, and hopefully walking away committed to making healthcare better in your community.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. We just heard from Premera Blue Cross President and CEO Jeff Rowe. Speaking next is 5-time Olympian Keegan Randall.
Well, hello everybody, how are we doing? We still doing okay? We've been sitting here a while. Yeah? All right. Well, Anchorage is where I grew up, and so it's an amazing honor to be here today with 1,500 of my closest friends to talk about how we can continue to strengthen our community and make sure it's strong for the future. So I was asked to come here today and talk a little bit about achieving success despite challenges. And I would have to say I've experienced that a few times. When I first got involved in cross-country skiing, we didn't have much of a path to follow. No American woman had ever won an Olympic medal or even been in the top 10. We'd had no World Cup success, no World Championship success. But for some reason, and I credit growing up here in kind of a rugged frontier, I believed it could be possible. So when I competed in my first Olympics in Salt Lake City in 2002, I was so excited to be there. I went out and skied as hard as I could, and I finished 44th place. But my dream of standing on that Olympic podium was so strong. So I started to think about how I was going to get from 44th place to the top step. And I encountered a lot of naysayers, thinking, well, I just don't think this is possible for Americans. One of those being my grandfather. He was very encouraging that I'd made it the Olympics, but he said, okay, Keegan, now it's time to go get your degree and go on to another career. And I said, I think I can be good at this. It's just gonna take time. So I sat down with my coaches and we developed this 10-year plan, which when you're 19 years old, 10 years is a long time to wrap your head around. But we planned it out and we created all these benchmarks along the way that I could build and build into the skier that I wanted to be. So I started working along that roadmap, plodding along at times, probably hit a low point in 2005 when I literally finished dead last in a world championship race. And a couple days later, our team was actually pulled off the course in the middle of the third leg of a four-person relay because we were about to be lapped. The future was not looking bright, but I kept my head down. I kept working on those small goals in front of me. I also knew that I was not going to be able to do this alone. And I kind of like having a team around. So I really pushed for our team to bring the best girls in the country together and challenge each other to raise the bar of American skiing. And this was not easy at first because we are an individual sport. I actually compete with these girls on the trail. But we were able to recognize that by coming together and having some common goals, a little bit of that commitment and making some changes in our training, we could be stronger together. So then this confluence of effort started to come together. Now, 10 years was a long time, but all of a sudden, when I went into the 2014 Olympic Games, suddenly I felt like I'd become the skier I wanted to be. I got to come into those Olympics as a gold medal favorite. In the 2 years leading in, I had been the top sprinter in the world. I had won on the Olympic course the year before, and I had all the confidence in the world that I could go and win America's first medal in cross-country skiing. But there was also a lot more attention and expectation than I'd ever experienced before. And just like creating that 10-year plan in the first place, I had no path to follow. I just had to figure it out and go for it with that belief and optimism. So the day before my Olympic race in Sochi, I made a promise to myself. And I reviewed all the work I'd done to get there, and I decided all I have to do is go out there and ski the best I possibly can tomorrow. If I do that, I can picture myself winning that gold medal. But as long as I give it my best effort, I will walk away satisfied. So the next day, Olympic race comes along. We're at the Winter Olympics. It's 60 degrees outside. What? That's okay. Even though the snow's melting, they're putting salt on it. It's not unlike the conditions I experience on the Alaskan glaciers in the summer. I'm totally comfortable here. I get my quarterfinal heat draw. I'm up against two of the other gold medal favorites. Only two of us will advance on. Again, I got this. I race these girls all season. I know my strategy is strong. I'm going to do this. So as I took out of the gate, my plan was to get into the front of the race, go as hard as I could up and over the hill, and drop everybody. So that's what I did. I got to the front of the race, I skied as hard as I possibly could, and by the top of the hill, I was in front. Now the crowd was cheering, so it was kind of hard to tell what was going on behind me. As I came down into the stadium, I came around a tight hairpin turn. Foot came off the ground for a split second, but I was able to get it back down. And as I headed into the stadium, I was thinking, this is working out perfectly. As we come off the final turn, I'm going to kick it into my final gear. But then as I came onto that home stretch, I realized, uh-oh, I'm already in my final gear. That's okay. I can see the finish line. I got this. So I'm sprinting and sprinting with everything I have. And as I start to go, I feel these shadows come alongside me. Oh no, come on, finish line's going, I gotta give everything. Those shadows start to get ahead of me. My body is at the max, my legs are screaming, I'm giving everything I have. Just before the finish line, I try to lunge and I see this other shadow come up. So as I skid to a halt, I look at the scoreboard. And I'm not first, and I'm not second. So I'm not automatically advancing to the semifinals. But I'm in a photo finish for third, and the announcer has let us know we're the fastest heat by 2 seconds, and the winner of that photo finish will advance. So for what felt like an eternity, I'm waiting for these results. When it comes out, I've lost the photo finish by 0.05 seconds. I could feel that sigh all the way across the world from everybody coming in Alaska. What? 0.05 seconds? I can't even comprehend that amount of time. And suddenly, my quest for gold is over. I'm eliminated in the quarterfinals. As you can imagine, the emotion that hits you in that moment, there's frustration, there's denial, could have easily let that bring me down. But I remembered that promise I'd made to myself, and that was, as long as you give it your best effort, you can walk away satisfied. So knowing that helped me walk through that media mix zone at the end of the race. And I'm fielding all these interviews, and people are asking me how it goes. And I'm like, well, I gave it my best. I executed my strategy. That's, you know, what's most important. And I was doing pretty well until Channel 2 asked me, Keegan, what do you have to say to all the Alaskans that are up in the middle of the night cheering you on? And that's when it got a little hard, because I recognized I wasn't out there just pursuing my personal goals today, but I was also representing the entire state. But after taking a deep breath, I was able to say, this, I gave my best effort, this was most important, and now I'm motivated to keep going. So after that Olympics, I'm not gonna lie, it was tough. So much expectation, so much confidence I could win that medal, and I had to walk away empty-handed. Now, I'd had a pretty amazing career up to that point. You know, I had 3 Crystal Globes in World Cup, I had some World Championship medals. I'd been at it a long time. And I also wanted to start a family. My husband and I were excited to do that, and the thought of waiting 4 more years was a little bit daunting. So I had to decide, was I done, or was I gonna keep going? Well, remember that team I talked about? That team had been building and cultivating, it strengthened, and had become like a second family to me. And because we had opportunities to win relay medals, I knew I wasn't ready to be done. So my husband and I got strategic. We did a little family planning, and we figured out maybe we could have a kid in the middle of the Olympic cycle, and I could come back. Okay, I was into it. I knew it wasn't gonna be easy, but I was excited for the challenge. So I had my son, I worked my way back. Of course, it wasn't easy, but working through, using that support team around me, I was able to come back into the Olympics. So this past winter, we're coming into the Olympic season. My preparation is on track. I have this amazing mindset where I realize because it's gonna be my last one, I'm ready to leave it all out there, and no matter what, I'll finish an amazing career. So everything's going perfect, and then in December, bam, I get a stress fracture in my foot. For 2 weeks, they tell me I can't do any footwork. For a month, I have to refrain from racing. I'm freaking out. It's 2 months to go until the Olympics, and I can't ski? So again, I had to rely on all the patience and optimism and determination I could muster to work through that challenge one day at a time, keep the faith that I was gonna get back there. So as we come into the Olympics, I qualify for the team, but I'm not sure what races I'm gonna get to do because that team that I had encouraged had gotten so fast. We only had limited start spots per race. So every day at the Olympics was just, am I gonna get to race? I don't know. So about 24 hours before the team sprint, which is the event I had been looking forward to for 4 years, they finally announced the team, and I'm selected as one of 2 people that get to race. So to me, I was ecstatic. I was so excited to be able to go out and represent my team. Now, the cool part about our team is we had talked about over the last 4 years, the last 8 years, how by working together, no matter what success any of us on the team achieved, it was gonna be because of our collective effort. So Jesse and I were so excited to represent our team. And we had actually teamed up 5 years prior at the World Championships when we'd won a gold medal. So we decided to recreate that magic by watching our favorite Glee clips, putting on our relay socks and our face paint, and going out there and skiing as hard as we could. That day, we never talked about winning medals. We talked about executing our strategy and enjoying the process. So when I walked out into that Olympic stadium under the lights, I was so excited to be there. I wasn't intimidated by the fact that we were up against some of the most accomplished female skiers our sport has ever seen. On my leg in particular, I was up against 2 women that had a collective 16 Olympic medals between them. They had been proven to be better long-distance skiers than me, but I knew my job was to just go out, hang in there, put my team in a good position, and then Jesse would take over on the second leg. So in the final, things are going really well. First lap goes through, and you've got 10 teams out there, skis and poles flying, everybody's jockeying for position. So I get a nice spot up front. I tag off to Jesse at about 25 miles an hour. She goes out through for her first lap. Second lap comes in, and I go, okay, I know this is where the pace is really gonna accelerate. This is where they're gonna put the pressure on. And in every step we went around that course, my confidence was growing because I was matching these women step for step. So we've gone already all out twice around this 3-minute loop. When it comes down to the last loop, I am ready to roll my eyes back in my head if I have to. I am gonna keep us in there. So we're going around the course and we come into the main climb and I start to feel a little bit of distance be created between us. There's the Norwegians and the Swedes are just ahead of me. And I had to dig down super deep to find that extra power and actually got so excited that I almost ran into the Swede in front of me. But I made it up and over that climb right with them. And so I got to tag off to Jesse in medal contention. Now it took everything I had to keep us in the race. So I stagger over to the finish line. And by the time I look up, the three leaders are coming into the stadium. And Jesse swings really wide, and I almost had to close my eyes, but she finds a spot and comes back in. As they come off the final turn, I find myself next to the Swedish team, and we are now neck and neck for the gold. So she and I are yelling at our teammates as if whoever can yell the loudest will compel their teammate to the finish first. So as they're coming, my view is head on, so I can't tell who's in front. They look like they are completely even. I see that lunge for the finish, and once more, I look up at the scoreboard, expecting to see photo finish. But then I see number one, United States, 0.19 of a second. We won the gold! I had to run out and tackle Jesse. The first thing she asked me is, did we just win the Olympics? And we shared this amazing moment, just this feeling of accomplishment of finally having done something that we had dreamed about and talked about for so long. And the best part was that our entire team was along the boards, cheering their faces off for us. And we got to share the accomplishment all together, just like we'd talked about, that any success any one of us had was a team success. So I'm so glad we have that on film because I have to go back and rewatch it just to make sure it actually happened. A dream come true. When I was standing on the medals podium the next evening, so many thoughts were running through my head. I thought about how 4 years prior, I had almost hung up my skis, almost left business unfinished. I thought about the month before when a stress fracture had almost derailed it and it would have been really easy to just say, oh, there goes my dream, it's all done. But because I kept gritting through it, kept taking it step by step, finding the positives in any situation, I got to win a very visual and heavy representation of what happens when you dream big, you work through challenges, you believe, and now I get to share this with others to inspire them to tackle their own challenges. And in thinking about kind of all this, I'm amazed at the parallels I see with where Anchorage is at right now. We are kind of facing what happened to me in Sochi. After an amazing trajectory of success, I had a major disappointment. I had a real rough patch, and it was hard to think of how I was going to overcome that to still get to that gold medal future. And I think where we are right now is having to kind of rebuild like I did in Sochi. Working together as a team, developing kind of that grit and strength that only comes from having gone through some challenging moments, and we're going to strategically work our way back to our own kind of golden future. And I really believe that what we're going through right now is only gonna make Anchorage and Alaska stronger. And I'll tell you, we will appreciate that a beautiful future that lies ahead that much more because of the challenges we've faced right now. So just like Anchorage and Alaska have believed in me over the 20 years it took to go from a never heard of to an Olympic champion, I believe that we can get to that future that we want. So are you guys with me? Yeah. All right. So in closing, I want to highlight a couple of organizations that are really close to my heart, whom will benefit from the Centerpiece auctions. About 10 years ago, I got involved with an organization called Fast and Female, which is keeping girls involved in sports. Research has shown that while boys and girls enter sports at pretty equal rates, girls, especially in their teen years, start to drop out. And being an athlete that has experienced so many positive things in my life from being involved in sports, we are passionate about counteracting that trend. And one of the most powerful ways we've figured out to do that is by getting our girls in contact with our elite athletes who can be such powerful role models, and by showing the girls that these athletes did not come out of a dinosaur egg somewhere. We grew up doing sports, overcoming our own challenges, and have now had these amazing lives become of it. I have seen the impact on a girl change in the matter of hours, and keeping her on the trajectory to being happy and healthy for their whole life, not just in the competitive realm, but just staying involved in sports for life. So this fall, we're coming up on our 10th anniversary of doing Fast and Female events here in Anchorage. So I hope any of you who have daughters or nieces out there will keep your eye out. It's an amazing event. It'll be in the middle of September at the Alaska Airlines Center. That organization has so much potential to grow. And now that I'm retiring from skiing, I'm really excited to work on that. The other one is kind of a new chapter in my life. As many of you know, last month I was diagnosed with early stage breast cancer, and I have committed to staying active through my treatment because I know that's going to keep me sane, and I also know it's going to help make my treatment more effective. And this group, Active Against Cancer, who was founded by Greta Waitz, who was an 8-time winner of the New York City Marathon, an elite athlete who also got cancer, found out that by staying active through her treatment, not only did it help her physical and mental well-being, but it actually made her treatment more effective. So Active Against Cancer funds research to prove how physical activity can make treatment better and also makes great connections and places where people going through cancer can find a community and help be encouraged to be active. So two amazing organizations that I'm really excited to put energy to help growing. So I really appreciate your support. And then in closing, like I said, I really believe in the collective spirit we have here today to overcome some of the challenges that we've heard about today. And I know if we keep going, that a success will come despite challenges. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Addressing Alaskans today on Alaska Public Media. We just heard the 2018 three-year outlook report for Anchorage presented by the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. We heard from AEDC President and CEO Bill Popp, Premera Blue Cross President and CEO Jeff Rowe, and we closed this hour with 5-time Olympian Keegan Randall. This event was recorded at the Dena'ina Center on July 25th. You can find links to the full report at alaskapublic.org. For KSKA, I'm Ammon Swenson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.